So Arturo Marquez, that's a great piece. I so enjoyed listening to that for the first time. Danzón number two, the audience is going to love this one.
It's a really charming, very popular piece right now, very Latin in its feel, with its percussion aspect to it and its driving dance rhythms. It's sexy, it's wonderful, and it makes you want to dance. It's a great piece. So this is a new piece for you?
Yes, it is. And that opening section where you have the clarinet and the claves and that, you know, Cuban rhythm, I know it's so important down there in Cuba, the claves are, but he's a Mexican composer, is that right?
That is correct. That is correct. But this Latin feel, it just dominates the entire piece. And then it just keeps getting faster and faster and faster until this wisping dance at the end. It's just a fabulous piece of music. I'm happy to introduce it to our audience.
Yeah, John Dressler brought up a recording of that for the preview Classical Encore show last week, and it was that Simon Bolivar Youth Orchestra,
right,
from
with,
South America.
Dudamel conducting. It's very popular for them, and they were the ones that kind of championed this piece, made it very popular on YouTube. So I'm happy to introduce it to our audiences as well. And your reaction to the piece?
I just loved it. And again, you said where it picks up speed, I thought it picks up speed like a train, you know, like a locomotive
exactly
speeding
right
up. And all of those different dance forms sort of rolled into a 9-minute piece.
Yeah, it's a great opener, and I think it's something fun to introduce to both the symphony and our patrons. So it's going to be a great way to get started. And then we bring on world-renowned flautist Eugenia Zuckerman, which is just a joy to work with, and she's just super, doing the Mozart Flute Concerto number 2. Now, this is interesting because Mozart wrote a flute concerto in G major, which is number 1, and that's the one that's often played. So when you say Flute Concerto of Mozart, that's what everybody assumes. Number 2 originally probably was an oboe concerto that he transcribed for flute.
Okay.
And a little lesser known, but equally as beautiful. So it's, again, a very popular composer, Mozart, but a work that we probably don't hear that often being played with the flute.
I'm trying to remember how many flute concerti he had.
I think it's just 2.
Yeah, and I was thinking 5, but no, that's the violin concerti.
That's correct. 5 violin concertos. And actually, number 1 was really considered the flute concerto, and I think this one, like I said, was originally probably written for the oboe, transcribed later for the flute, sometimes played with oboe too. So it's a very beautiful piece, typical Mozart. And Eugenia Zuckerman is just, this is her repertoire and beautiful stuff. We're really in for a big treat this week.
We have a number of her recordings up here, and one I think I like the best, and you mentioned Mozart, she played Eine kleine Nachtmusik with the Shanghai String Quartet, and it put a really nice, light, different feel on an old favorite.
Extraordinary musician, and you know, she's the former wife of Pinka Zuckerman.
Okay, I did not know that.
Yes. They're still very good friends and communicate often. They have a big family now, grandkids and things. She's from the Zuckerman family, yes.
All right. Cesar Franck, it's an old war horse, but not as much of a war horse that people would know, I suppose.
I think you're right about that. Cesar Franck, you know, when I study this score and have performed it, it's a huge work in 3 movements, which breaks the mold a little bit of the, you know, the 4-movement symphony. But it's a wonderful work. I think the last movement might have some commercial value to it. People might have recognized some of the theme a little bit. But it's a beautiful, haunting work in D minor. And when I think about this symphony, I am disappointed that he didn't do more symphonic writing. This is the only one.
Right. He's known more as an organist.
That's correct.
I read one reference that said he was considered the best organist after Bach at his time. He wrote like a dozen organ pieces, and that sort of cemented him as the master at
right
the time.
And you can hear that organ, the facade in his choral writing and the harmonies.
Exactly.
You can hear that in the thing. This is why when I'm performing this work, I constantly am striving to get the orchestra to think tall chords instead of projecting chords that are strident and go to the back of the hall. I like to think of the woodwinds and the brass of thinking height in the sound, because this gives it more of an illusion and more of the feel and sound of organ writing. And this works beautifully in this particular piece.
Yeah, Franck is, some might say, so over-the-top schmaltzy romantic, but it's so good. He does it so well as anyone. I guess channeling his inner Berlioz.
I think you're right. The only difference between him and Berlioz is that Franck uses a very normal orchestral size, where Berlioz would hire 14 bassoons,
right?
You know, and over-orchestrate things because he had that luxury. So therefore, it's not performed as much because it's a very expensive scores. But Franck is beautiful, and he starts with his color. The first movement begins with the viola, cello, double bass. And that's, again, an organ color. That's probably left-hand pedals and pedals. And then he's getting that color. And then he responds by the third measure with the oboe, English horn, clarinet, and bass clarinet. So, again, you can hear real manual changes in his orchestration, like you would hear in the manual of the organ.
And some of the crescendi is like you open the swell box.
That's correct, because he swells, and he uses the crescendo very beautifully. It's times when it crescendos in the middle of a measure and then back down again, just so you can bring out that color, which is a very organ-like thing. And then there's other bars where, over two measures, it's a molto crescendo, and then you arrive on the second measure, on the third beat, with a subito diminuendo to pianissimo the following measure. Again, those are, again, effects that you would have heard. They also are effects that would be created in a cathedral setting when you go from a forte to a subito piano. And time has to be made so that harmony, the dissonance, clears before we move on to the next section. And that's something you also see in his symphony. For example, when he goes into that first allegro non troppo in the first movement, he builds with this tremolo, and the orchestra's building, the brass enter, and he arrives at finally a fortissimo before we go into cut time at the allegro non troppo, where the first main theme starts, the motive. But you have to put a break before it, because even in a good concert hall like the Carson Center, the reverberation is so long that it would create a dissonance that is not desirable.
Yeah, you have to work the room.
Absolutely right. And don't forget to tip your waitresses and bartenders.
I read it wasn't very well received at the premiere, and what they were talking about, there weren't that many symphonies in France at that time. They weren't really into the symphony in those days. It was too Germanic, some of them said.
I've heard that and read that also, and that's pretty true. The same thing would have been for Italy as well, that type of thing. You know, opera was big in Italy. Chamber music was big in France at that point. Vocal music was big. But the symphony really had not developed there. It was a German thing. And predominantly, when you look at the repertoire, still to this day, Germany really leads in many, many ways the symphony and really produced a lot of that thing. But like I said, in listening to this work by Franck, I'm disappointed that he didn't write more, because I think he was onto something very, very original and beautiful.
Just another reason, folks, for everyone to come out and hear this performance.
I agree. I think it's going to be great. Between the Marquez, the Mexican flair with this Latin feel with the great rhythms and exciting tune, to Eugenia Zuckerman playing this popular composer, Mozart's Flute Concerto No. 2, not often heard. It's like an opportunity, and I guarantee it's never been done in either of those works have been done here in Paducah. So it's, again, inspiring and turning on our audiences to wonderful pieces of music that we just haven't had a chance to hear yet. Well, we feature then the Franck, which is a really meat and potatoes kind of symphony, but again, probably not as well known as a Beethoven 5 type of thing. But something when you walk away, your impression again when you hear this, George, is what after you hear Franck?
I keep going back to the organ music because I know the chorales, the three chorales so well, and I just love that chromatic writing that's all through there.
Right, and this is something he uses in this as well. Matter of fact, the best way to study a composer and how to approach his symphonies is to listen to his sonatas, his chamber music, his violin sonata, for example, has smatterings of all these ideas that you could hear in the symphony at some point. The same thing with Mahler. You know, every composer has some tricks and some styles and some modulations and some harmonizations or melodies that they like so much that it keeps coming back in other symphonies, a little more disguised, but it's there. And the same thing with Franck. You listen to his other music, like you mentioned, his organ works, and you're going to hear that orchestration, that harmony, and those colors in the symphony as well. So it's just a beautiful, beautiful piece of music.